Rediscover God's Word, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. This is Real Bible Study with teacher Tom Bradford. Welcome to Torah Class.
And where we are, we started last week with a five-part series called The Ten Lost Tribes of Israel. And we covered a great deal of ground in our previous lesson of the Ten Lost Tribes of Israel, part one. So to get our bearings, let's reread a few verses, just a few verses from Genesis chapter 48. So open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 48 to verse 1. Genesis chapter 48 to verse 1. A while later, someone told Joseph that his father was ill, and he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Jacob was told, "Here comes your son, Joseph." Israel gathered his strength and sat up in bed. And Yaakov said to Yosef, "El Shaddai appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me, saying to me, 'I will make you fruitful and numerous. I will make you a group of peoples, and I will give this land to your descendants to possess forever.' Now, your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. Ephraim and Manasseh will be as much mine as Reuven and Shimon, Reuben and Simon are. The children born to you after them will be yours, but for the purposes of inheritance, they are to be counted with their older brothers." Now move on down to verse 17. When Yosef saw that his father was laying his right hand on Ephraim's head, it displeased him. And he lifted up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head and place it instead on Manasseh's head. And Yosef said to his father, "Don't do it that way, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head." But his father refused. He said, "I know that, my son, I know it. He too will become a great people. He too will become a people, and he too will be great. Nevertheless, his younger brother will be greater than he, and his descendants will grow into many nations." We are well into gathering the puzzle pieces to explore whether the legend of the 10 lost tribes of Israel is a historical fact or a legendary myth, and whether it has any impact on our lives as believers in the Messiah living in the 21st century. And we ended our first session immediately following Moses' death and with the 12 tribes now being led by Joshua, approaching the Jordan River to cross over into Canaan. Now, interestingly, 2.5 of the tribes of Israel elected to stay outside of the Promised Land, preferring instead to settle on the east side of Jordan. The remaining 9.5 tribes made the crossing in order to make the land of Canaan their home, as was envisioned in the Abrahamic covenant. Now, we talked about the concept of a half tribe because about half of the tribal members of Manasseh elected to stay on the east side of the Jordan River, while the other half of the tribe followed Joshua into the Promised Land. Still, they all retained their common tribal loyalties. Well, now at this point in the Bible, as we look at the listing of the tribes of Israel to whom Moses had allotted territory, we find an interesting and an important transformation has occurred over the 5 centuries that have passed since Jacob's cross-handed blessing occurred. Joseph was no longer mentioned as one of the 12 named tribes of Israel. Instead, his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, have replaced him Therefore, instead of there being a territory assigned to the tribe of Joseph, per se, there were instead territories assigned to his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. We also find that Levi, which was Moses' own tribe, was omitted from the assignment of territory. Instead of receiving their own territory, the tribe of Levi received four cities inside each of the 12 tribal territories for a total of 48 Levite cities. And the result of all this was that two of Jacob's natural sons, Joseph and Levi, were superseded by his adopted two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, on the list of tribes that were eligible to receive territory in the Promised Land. And right up until this day, when the 12 tribes of Israel are mentioned, neither Joseph nor Levi is included. The tribe of Levi is certainly acknowledged as still existing, and they remain Hebrews. They're relevant, and they know who they are. But they were set apart by God. They were given a special category and purpose all of their own. They were to be Jehovah's personal priests. All right, let's do some more reading. Open your Bibles again, this time to the book of Numbers. Book of Numbers, chapter 1. We're going to start reading at verse 44. Starting at verse 44 of Numbers chapter 1. Moshe, Aharon, and the 12 leaders of Israel, each from a clan, counted the people of Israel by their clans, those 20 years old and over, eligible for military service in Israel, and the grand total came to 603,550. But those who were Leviim, Levites, according to the clan of their fathers, were not counted in this census. Because Adonai had told Moshe, do not include the clan of Levi when you take the census of the people of Israel. Instead, give the Leviim charge over the tabernacle of the testimony, its equipment, everything else connected with it. They are to carry the tabernacle and all of its equipment, serve in it, and set up their camp around it. Okay. The Levites were designated by God as the priestly tribe that officiated over all the temple sacrifices and rituals and ceremonies. So even though we speak of there being 12 tribes of Israel, technically, with the Levites included, there were 13 tribes of Israel at the time of land allotment by Moses. Well, Israel crossed over the Jordan around 1300 BC. For the first few years after entering Canaan, Israel operated under the central leadership of Joshua. And after his death, for the next 250 to 300 years, the tribes of Israel remained generally independent from one another, even warring amongst themselves on occasion. They were somewhat of a loose confederation, held together by their common allegiance to the covenant of Moses and by their ancestral family ties. But they also found themselves under attack from time to time by one or more of the many Canaanite tribes that Joshua had foolishly allowed to remain in the land instead of driving them out or killing them, as God had ordered. Well, this 300-year period of time is known in the Bible as the time of the judges, whereby a person called a shofet in Hebrew, judge in English, would be raised up by God as needed to help deliver one Israelite tribe or another from the hand of an oppressor. Now, these judges had no goal of uniting the 12 tribes of Israel under a single leader, as it was in Joshua's day. They sought only to advance their own particular tribe. There was no vision at that time of creating a sovereign nation of Israel. Unity was not what the 12 tribes sought. Dominance is the means of a tribal cultural government. It was so then, it remains so today. Therefore, each of the 12 tribes vied for dominance, for superiority over the 11 others. And of course, dominance is attained by means of wealth and power and population and the occasional use of force to achieve. Now, as we approach 1020 BC, the inherent instability of the tribal system of society that Israel operated under, coupled with the reality that virtually every tribe of Israel was facing pressures from various foreign invaders, drove the Israelites to beg their leaders and God for a king. A king, one man, to rule over all the tribes. A king to bring them together so they could survive. A king like what their pagan neighbors had. And God obliged them. And his name was Saul, Shaul. King Saul, first king of Israel. But he was not the ideal king in God's eyes. Saul was not of the prescribed lineage to be the leader of Israel. Judah was the tribe that was to have leadership authority according to Jacob's deathbed blessing. Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin. Now, try as he might, Saul never reigned over a united Israel. And though his hope was to create a single sovereign nation made up of the 12 tribal districts, he never succeeded. But the king God had prepared to follow him did succeed in uniting the 12 tribes, and his name was David. Now, initially, David was king only over an area at the southern end of Canaan, an area dominated by his own tribe, Judah. But around 1000 BC, David was finally king over the united nation of Israel, composed of northern and southern Canaan. And the 12 tribes were still each in their allotted 12 districts, but they now gave their allegiance to a central government that was ruled by David. David expanded Israel's territory, and after he died, his son Solomon, the new king, expanded it even further. Events unfolded rapidly after Solomon's death. And by 925 BC, Israel was mired in a bloody civil war. Some of the Israelite tribes grew in number and power, as well as in territory, by taking the wealth and the people and the territory from the other tribes. Therefore, some tribes grew, then others shrunk in numbers and influence and in land. In the end, the two tribes, one in the north, one in the south, became the most dominant. And this is the usual result in a tribal society. These two tribes were so dominant that for all practical purposes, one could say they had absorbed the other 10 Israelite tribes, not including Levi. The tribe of Judah, the one that would one day produce Yeshua of Nazareth, became the master of the south. But in the north, it was the tribe of Ephraim. And Ephraim was larger, it was more powerful than Judah. Yep, the tribe that came from Joseph's son Ephraim, one of the two sons that had been adopted away from Joseph by his own father Jacob, was now the most powerful tribe tribe of them all. Now, it's an interesting reality that our year 2024, the now 75-plus-year-old modern state of Israel, has existed nearly as long as the original Israel ruled by Kings David and then Solomon. The ancient nation of Israel had survived as a sovereign and united nation for only a mere 80 years. But then it dissolved into two separate and independent Hebrew kingdoms, Judah in the south, Ephraim in the north. And generally speaking, the kingdom of Judah consisted of the Israelite tribes of Judah and then portions of Benjamin and Simeon, Shimon. The kingdom of Ephraim consisted of the Israelite tribe of Ephraim plus the remaining Israelite tribes for a total of 10. The Levites were a separate issue because they were the priestly tribe and had not, since the time of Moses, been counted among their brethren as an official tribe of Israel. They had been placed by God into a very unique category of Hebrews, his priests. Now, I've laid out several puzzle pieces for you, and now it's time to start linking them together. So please pay close attention to what I'm about to tell you. After King Solomon died, the United Nation of Israel was split into two kingdoms in a civil war, North versus South, very much like our American Civil War when our nation became split into two confederations, each claiming to represent the true America. Notice that I called the kingdom in the north Ephraim, even though typically our Bibles will label it as Israel. The historical reality is somewhat different. Okay, the northern kingdom only retained the national identity name of Israel for but a few decades after the breakup of the formerly unified nation of Israel that had existed under Kings David and Solomon. Possibly in a misguided attempt for clarity, or as I suspect, an ignorance of the importance of the topic, over the last several centuries, the name Ephraim, as was the actual name for the northern kingdom, was dropped from our Bibles. And the name Israel was inserted by Bible translators when they were referring to the post-Civil War northern kingdom of the 10 tribes. Unfortunately, what was indeed, in all likelihood, an innocent effort to attain clarity has backfired. And it's wound up causing much confusion because many biblical end times prophecies specifically refer to Ephraim by name, but not Israel per se. So it's been challenging for scholars to figure out what some of the strange prophecies concerning Ephraim meant, because the true name of the northern kingdom, Ephraim, had become masked. Now it was obscured. See, it's vital for us to grasp the connection between Ephraim, the son of Joseph, and Ephraim, the name of the tribe he spawned, and then Ephraim as the name of the northern Israelite kingdom, and then link those to the meaning of the term Ephraim that we'll find mentioned in the books of the prophets. And to help us as we get used to calling the northern kingdom by its correct historical name, Ephraim, instead of Israel, I will sometimes switch back and forth in this series of lessons between calling the northern kingdom Ephraim and other times Ephraim Israel. Same thing. But I'm still referring to the same place, same people, same area. And to be clear, all of these references to Ephraim are to the tribe and then eventually the kingdom of Ephraim in every case. one more time. The kingdom of Judah plus the kingdom of Ephraim together form the entire people group called Israel, all the tribes. Now, over the years, after Israel's civil war dissolved the United Nation of Israel, the two resulting kingdoms of Ephraim and Judah continued to war against one another from time to time. Ephraim, now a conglomerate of 10 of the 12 tribes, began to degenerate even further in their character. They sought after and adopted the ways of its Gentile neighbors, the Goyim, who surrounded them, usually in the form of taking on elements of their heathen cultures and gods. In fact, the first king of the newly founded northern kingdom adopted golden calf worship. Judah in the south tried to stay a little more isolated from the influence of their pagan neighbors, and though they failed often, they generally stayed significantly truer to the ways God had taught them through Moses than did their brethren to the north. This was because it was in Jerusalem of Judah that the temple of God resided and the priesthood operated. So the more traditional Hebrew religious ways were naturally more firmly entrenched there. Now, through the powerful words of Isaiah and Hosea and Elijah and several other prophets, God warned the people of the northern kingdom of Ephraim, Israel, that if they continued to turn their backs on him, lusting after heathen practices, preferring pagan worship and Gentile lifestyle to the Torah of Moses, God would allow them to be taken from their portion of the promised land, scattered among the nations, Gentile nations, of course, and that they would become to him a lo ami, a Hebrew term meaning a non-people. I want to repeat that. God, through various prophets, told the people of Ephraim, those 10 tribes of Israel that formed the northern kingdom, that he was going to allow at least some of them to lose their identity as Hebrews, as Israelites, and instead they would become joined and mixed with the Gentile world. Put another way, Ephraim would be barred from the land of Israel, separated away from the family of Hebrews, and instead be woven into cultures and the nations of Gentiles, at least for a time, that would be the case. Now, one of the prophets Jehovah used to warn Ephraim Israel was Hosea. Now, in the book of Hosea, actually pronounced Hosea, chapter 1, we get a curious story about Hosea being ordered to marry a harlot, a prostitute named Gomer. And Gomer produces three children for Hosea. Now, I want you to open your Bibles to the book of the prophet Hosea, chapter 1. Hosea, chapter 1. Hosea, chapter 1. Short chapter, and we're going to read it all. This is the word of Adonai that came to Hoshea, the son of Beeri, during the reigns of Uzziah, Yotam, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and during the reign of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. Adonai's opening words in speaking to Hoshea were to instruct Hoshea, go marry a whore. Have children with this whore, for the land is engaged in flagrant whoring away from Adonai. So he went and married Gomer, the daughter of Divlaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. And Adonai said to him, call him Yisrael, because in only a short time I will punish the house of Jehu for having shed blood at Yisrael. I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. And when that day comes, I will break the bow of Israel in the Yisrael Valley. She conceived again and bore a daughter. And Adonai said to him, name her Loruchmah, unpitied, for I will no longer have pity on the house of Israel. By no means will I forgive them, but I will pity the house of Judah. I will save them not by bow, sword, battle, horses, or cavalry, but by Adonai their God. After weaning Loruchmah, she conceived and bore a son. And Adonai said, name him Lo Ami, not my people, because you are not my people, and I will not be your God. Those aren't words anybody wants to hear. Now, I want you to notice that nowhere in the chapter that I just read to you is the word Ephraim used. Rather, it says Israel. This is misleading for someone who is not familiar with ancient Bible history. It ought to say Ephraim instead of Israel because it would have made matters clearer. Hosea lived during the tragic last days of the northern kingdom of Ephraim. The time was around 740 BC. And obviously there was no unified nation of Israel at the time Hosea lived. It had ceased to exist a couple hundred years earlier. And the first blow to dissolve the nation of Israel happened when civil war tore Israel into two separate kingdoms not long after King Solomon's death. And then later, the northernmost of the two kingdoms, Ephraim Israel, was conquered by Assyria, and the people were deported. Now, of course, if we don't know this, then it would seem as though Hosea was talking about a monolithic, unified Israelite nation as it existed under King David. This use of the name Israel in Hosea at this point in history is not biblical error. Rather, it is that later editors simply shortened the name of the northern kingdom from Ephraim Israel to Israel, when in retrospect, it would have been far better, for the sake of clarity, to have called it Ephraim if they were going to shorten it. Now, just listen once again to Hosea 1 through 5, chapter 1, 1 through 5. This is the word of Adonai that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, during the reigns of Uzziah, Yotam, Achaz, and Yeshiah, the kings of Judah, and during the reign of Yeravon, the son of Joash, king of Israel. Adonai's opening words in speaking to Hosea were to instruct Hosea, go marry a whore, have children with this whore, for the land is engaged in flagrant whoring, whoring away from Adonai, so he went. And he married Gomer, the daughter of Diflaim. She conceived and bore him a son. Adonai said to him, call him Yisrael, because in only a short time I will punish the house of Yehu for having shed blood at Israel. I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. And when that day comes, I'll break the bow of Israel in the Yisrael Valley. The three children that will be born to Hosea are meant to symbolize, or perhaps to give a prophetic illustration, of the three stages of judgmental punishments that God would wreak upon the northern kingdom of Ephraim Israel. Child one, which represents stage one, is named Yisrael. We say Jezreel, like the Jezreel Valley. And it means El, God, will scatter. El will sow. The next child, stage two, is named Lo Ruchmah, which means no compassion, no mercy. Now the last child, stage three, was to be named Lo Ami, which means not a people, or better, not my people, maybe a non-people. So in Hosea 1:9, God announces his final stage of punishment upon the now thoroughly evil and corrupt northern kingdom called Ephraim Israel. He says, name him the third child Lo Ami, for you are not my people and I am not your God. Disaster. As of that moment, God turned his back on the people of the kingdom of Ephraim. Those 10 tribes that constituted the northern kingdom called Ephraim. And although this was going to be a very long excommunication and exile for these 10 tribes, it would not be permanent. Far into the future, God would have mercy and he would take them back as his people. How do I know that? Hosea 2:1. Nevertheless, the people of Israel will number as many as the grains of sand by the sea, which cannot be measured or counted, so that the time will come when, instead of being told, you are not my people, it will be said to them, you are the children of the living God. And by the way, your Bibles may include this in Hosea chapter 1 instead of chapter 2. This is because the original Hebrew Bible was laid out this way, as opposed to the Greek translation called the Septuagint, that at times stopped and started chapters at slightly different points. Same words, though. Now, let's understand that as of today, around 2,700 years have passed since the era of Ephraim's, Israel's, excommunication that God warned he was going to do. And it appears that as of now, that time for God's restoration of Ephraim has arrived. But if I'm right, it indeed is time. Where are the scattered people of the 10 tribes? What evidence is there that they even exist in order that they can return to their homeland, Israel? Well, we fast forward and we find that Ephraim, according to Hosea, was about to be booted out of Israel, excommunicated from the promised land, removed from God's sight. And only some of Ephraim would, according to Hosea, be blended in. They would get mixed with the world of the Goyim, the Gentiles. Yet in the book of Hosea, the Lord also said that this excommunication was not permanent. He would eventually restore them. So as some members of each of these 10 tribes would somehow retain their Hebrew identity over all those centuries in far-flung places, later in the book of Ezekiel, we will see a clearer explanation of the ending of that extended period of excommunication of Ephraim, again meaning those 10 tribes. Now let's be very clear, because this is key to understanding what you will learn from here forward. This prophecy made by Hosea referred only to the 10 tribes that made up the house of Ephraim, the northern kingdom of Israel. It had nothing to do with the other two tribes that together made up the house of Judah, the southern kingdom, a people we today call the Jews. In the 720s BC, the divine shoe finally fell, and the powerful Assyrians, the greatest empire in the world at that time, came against the kingdom of Ephraim, Israel, in a series of attacks over about a 10-year time span. And they conquered them. Millions of the 10 tribes that made up the Ephraim Israelite kingdom were deported from their own land into the more than 100 vassal nations and kingdoms that had come under Assyrian dominance. This is evident, this is an event whereby those 10 tribes of Israel became the so-called 10 lost tribes of Israel, and in time gained legend status. This is when those 10 tribes were, as the scriptures described it, swallowed up into the Gentile world. So now we know with certainty there was a group of 10 tribes of Israel that actually existed, but were lost to history, at least to Western history. It's not a fairy tale. It's not a myth. But there's still more, much more to the story. Now, the circumstances were that the 10 tribes that made up the northern kingdom of Israel, collectively called Ephraim or Israel, and we're not including Judah, the Jews in this, were deported en masse to regions all over the Assyrian Empire. The tribes and clans were separated from one another, dispersed, intermixed with scores of the other races and tribes of primarily the Asian, but also the African continents. The Bible even tells us where large portions of some of the 10 tribes were exiled to. What is also clear is that some tribes were split up so that all members of a particular tribe did not go to the same place. Rather, they were dispersed clan by clan. So the level of a tribe being torn apart was not uniform. It varied widely on a tribe-by-tribe basis. The Assyrian Empire at that time was composed of 120 conquered nations all across Asia and Northern Africa. So there was this huge range of nations and cultures and races that these Ephraim Israelites were sent to be assimilated. 2 Kings chapter 17 tells the story of the conquest of Ephraim by Assyria. Let's just read a portion of it. So turn in your Bibles to 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 1. But first, every time we come to the word Israel, remember, it is synonymous with the kingdom of Ephraim, two names for the same place. Also, that the king whose name is Hosea in this chapter is not the same fellow as the prophet Hosea. They're two different people who simply bore the same name. Okay? So, 2 Kings chapter 17, we're going to read the first 23 verses. It was in the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, that Hoshea the son of Elah began his reign over Israel in Shomron, Samaria, and he ruled for 9 years. He did what was evil from Adonai's perspective, although he wasn't as bad as the kings of Israel who had preceded him. Shalmaneser, king of Asher, that's Assyria, advanced against Hoshea, and Hoshea became his vassal and paid him tribute. But the king of Asher found that Hoshea was conspiring against him, and he had sent messengers to the king of Egypt and not paid his tribute to the king of Asher, as he had previously done every year. For this, the king of Asher imprisoned him and putting him in chains. Then the king of Asher invaded all the land, advanced on Shomron, put it under siege for 3 years. And in the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Asher captured Shomron. He carried Israel away captive to Asher, resettling them in Halah, in Havor, on the Gozan River, and in the cities of the Medes. This came about because the people of Israel had sinned against Adonai their God, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, out from under the domination of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. They feared other gods, and they lived by the customs of the nations that Adonai had expelled ahead of the people of Israel and by those of the kings of Israel. The people of Israel secretly did things that were not right, according to Adonai their God. They built high places for themselves wherever they lived, from the watchtower to the fortified city. They set up standing stones and sacred poles for themselves on any high hill, under any green tree. There they would make offerings on all the high places, like the nations Adonai had expelled ahead of them, and would do wicked things to provoke the anger of Adonai. And moreover, they served idols, something Adonai had expressly told them not to do. Adonai had warned Israel and Judah in advance through every prophet and seer, turn from your evil ways. Obey my mitzvot, that's my commands, and my regulations, in accordance with the entire Torah, which I ordered your ancestors to keep and which I sent to you through my servants, the prophets. Nevertheless, they refused to listen, but made themselves as stubborn as their ancestors, who did not put their trust in Adonai, their God. Thus, they rejected his laws, his covenant, which he had made with their ancestors, and the calm warnings he had given them. And instead, they pursued worthless things and became worthless themselves, imitating the nations around them, whom Adonai had ordered them not to emulate. They abandoned all the mitzvot of Adonai, their God. They made cast metal images for themselves, two calves. They made an Asherah. They worshiped the whole army of heaven. They served Baal. They had their sons and daughters pass through fire as a sacrifice. They used divination and magic spells. They gave themselves over to do what was evil from Adonai's perspective, thereby provoking him, so that Adonai, by now very angry with Israel, removed them from his sight. None was left except the tribe of Judah alone. However, neither did Judah obey the mitzvot of Adonai their God. Rather, they lived according to the customs of Israel. Yes, Adonai became to despise all the descendants of Israel. He caused them trouble. He handed them over to plunderers till finally he threw them out of his sight. He tore Israel away from the house of David. They made Jeroboam, the son of Nevat, king. And Jeroboam drew Israel away from following Adonai and made them commit a great sin. The people of Israel followed the example of all the sins that Jeroboam had committed and did not turn away from them until Adonai removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said he would through all his servants, the prophets. Thus, Israel was carried away captive from their own land to Asher, and it remains so to this day. Now, this story is equal parts fascinating and frightening. See, here we see yet another demonstration of the fact that God will turn his back on those who turn their backs on him. And I cringe when I think of our great nation, founded upon biblical principles by devout and courageous Christians, that is progressively and officially turning against the God of Israel and against our Redeemer, Yeshua, Jesus the Christ. I wrestle with the reality that just as Judaism pulled Israel into a man-made, tradition-based faith and away from the actual Holy Scriptures, so it is that the church has done essentially the same thing. And I cringe when I think of the growing Muslim influence in America, and just as problematic, the vocal secular humanist longings of our academics and our political elite from our president on down, which begins with indoctrinating our children and our public school systems. And now the 300-year-old European Enlightenment era philosophies are being written into our nation's laws. For effect, just substitute the word America everywhere you read Israel in this chapter, and perhaps it'll impact you as it impacted me, because we seem to be following in that same spiritual death spiral. Now, we are told in 2 Kings 17:6 that some of the tribes of the northern kingdom were taken to a place in Assyria called Halah, another called Havor, and these were near yet another place they were exiled, the Gozan River. And even more, they were deported to cities throughout the area of the Medes. 1 Kings 14, verses 15 and 16 tells us they were also sent beyond the Euphrates. That is, some went to unspecified areas north and east of the Euphrates River. 1 Chronicles 5:26 tells us specifically that the tribes of Gad, Reuben, and half of the tribe of Manasseh, in other words, those tribes that had settled on the east of the Jordan, rather than having entered into the promised land with Joshua, they were taken away to Assyria proper. Conversely, thousands upon thousands of citizens of the various 120 nations of the Syrian Empire, all Gentiles, of course, were sent to repopulate the land of the former northern kingdom of Ephraim, Israel. This was standard protocol that Assyria used to control its growing empire. Conquer, empty a nation of its indigenous people, scatter them into the other nations Assyria controlled, and then repopulate the newly conquered nation with various people from other nations, thus destroying that nation's historical fabric. Now, it would be incorrect to think that it was all quite that cut and dried. Nothing in history is that nice and neat. Some members of Ephraim Israel were allowed to remain in the Holy Land. Not many, but a relative few. Apparently, some among the 10 tribes hid out in small numbers, escaped the gaze of their conquerors. Others probably did not seem to pose any benefit or threat to the Assyrians, so they were allowed to stay in their own land. A few others, hearing of the advancing Assyrian army, well, they fled southward to the kingdom of Judah, which had been spared by Assyria due to a treaty that had been agreed to between the king of Judah and the king of Assyria. Now, this handful of various Israelite tribal members of the northern kingdom of Ephraim held on to their individual tribal identities for a time, but not long. Within 3 or 4 generations, they were simply assimilated into the tribe of Judah. This process whereby a portion of a particular tribe migrates, eventually mixes itself into another more dominant tribe, then takes on the identity of the more dominant tribe while losing track of its own, was and remains just common among tribal societies. Yet we also see mention of the names of a couple of the 10 lost tribes in the New Testament. So a few folks from the 10 northern tribes stubbornly held on to their original tribal identities, although it was more a remembrance of a former time than of a present political reality. But in the main, the 10 tribes that formed Ephraim Israel were scattered and dispersed inside the vast Asian continent. There was no genocide upon them. They did not die out. They did not become extinct. They didn't suddenly all become Gentiles. They were not whisked into a spacecraft by aliens, nor were they raptured away to heaven. Instead, they rather quickly mixed themselves with the many tribes of other cultures and races of Asia and Africa, to the point that within just a few generations, for the most part, their children and grandchildren didn't even remember that they had a Hebrew heritage. Now, what we must grasp is that, true to the biblical prophecies, these 10 Israelite tribes mixed themselves with Gentile peoples, and these Hebrews intermarried, interbred with Gentiles, and in time many forgot about their Hebrew heritage. The effect was that significant portions of various tribal members of the 10 tribes of Israel became more Gentile than Hebrew. And the Hebrew genes of a significant portion of Ephraim Israelites were melded with the genes of scores of different Gentile peoples and races. Others of the 10 tribes retained a greater measure of racial purity. They stayed tightly banded together in order to remember and maintain their Israelite heritage, but generally did so quietly as to not draw attention to themselves and cause reprisals among the various societies where they now lived. And since the land and the nation of Israel no longer existed, these 10 tribes had no hereditary nation to move back to, even if they wanted to. So generally speaking, they had little choice but to stay where they were and make peace with their circumstances. Ephraim had indeed become swallowed up among the Gentile nations in a couple of different senses. Listen to what the authoritative Encyclopedia Judaica, a Jewish source, says about this. It says, it is evident that as a rule, they, meaning Ephraim, did not possess the status of slaves nor of an oppressed population. These exiles were first settled in Mesopotamia, north of the Euphrates, as land tenants of the king of Assyria. The craftsmen among them were employed in state enterprises. Eventually, some of the exiles achieved economic and social status and even occupied high-ranking positions in the Assyrian government. The striking of roots in Mesopotamian society by a large part of the descendants of the Israelite exiles resulted in their eventual absorption into the foreign milieu. A large part, not all, but some impossible to measure large part, became fully assimilated and either lost or lost interest in their Hebrew heritage. Now, since the time of this event, of the 10 lost tribes being dispersed into the Gentile world, 27 centuries passed. There's been a whole lot of mixing going on in this world. I can guarantee you that simply from mathematical probabilities, many likely are that are hearing this message have genes from one or more of the tribes of Israel. Now, of course, with the new DNA testing that's going on, many folks, from atheists to Christians, have recently found out that they have distant but undeniable genetic connection to the Hebrew people. But presently, there is no means to prove that same connection specifically to the 10 northern tribes. What does that mean for the fulfillment of as of yet unfulfilled biblical prophecy? For now, there's no way to know. But I think pretty soon we're going to find out. So what became of Judah? What of the tribe that formed the southern kingdom of Judah that had also absorbed much of the tribes of Benjamin and Simeon? Even more, where was the priestly tribe of Levi? Generally speaking, all those are the people who are called Jews in our current era. Jews are, for the most part, members of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. However, DNA only answers some of the questions. Till about 2,000 years ago, there was a definitive way for Jews to prove their heritage. They had written birth records, and their family lineage was documented, and it was actually stored in Jerusalem in a building that was called the Hall of Records. Unfortunately, this hall was destroyed and the records burned by the Romans in 70 AD. And like all other peoples and cultures, the Jews eventually found themselves marrying outside of their own Hebrew gene pool. Further complicating any effort to prove one's Jewishness, Gentiles were allowed to become Jews by declaration and by following a procedure that ended with circumcision for males. We see many examples in the Bible of pagans becoming Hebrews. God always made it possible for Gentile people to join his set-apart people. the Hebrews. And he gave instructions to Abraham and then much later to Moses that Gentile foreigners were to be admitted to the Hebrews, to the chosen people, as full equals under the condition they gave up their idols and worshiped only Yahweh, God of Israel. Well, the Bible makes it very clear that Israel became divided into two houses or two families or two kingdoms, all these terms being synonymous. The house of Ephraim and the tribes joined with him versus the house of Judah and the tribe joined with him. We know what happened to the Jews, those who formed the kingdom of Judah. Their nation remained intact for more than a century after Ephraim was conquered. But then Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, conquered Judah. However, just as Judah was hauled off and relocated as a group, it was allowed in time to return to the former homeland about 70 years later as a group. 5 centuries after that, though, they were again conquered in exile, this time by the Romans, and then they eventually came to be scattered all over our planet. But for the most part, the Jewish people retained their identity, even if some intentionally hid it, denied it, or became deeply buried in their family history. Then, in an event that has once again proven the inerrancy of biblical prophecy, Israel was reborn as a sovereign nation of Jews in 1948, and millions of Jews have come home. But what became of Ephraim? The 10 lost tribes of Israel. Was that the end of the 10 tribes? How could it be otherwise? I mean, after all, if you're lost, you're lost. Yet Ezekiel 37 states that in the latter days, as we stand on the threshold of the end times, the house of Ephraim will rejoin the house of Judah and be under the allegiance of one king forever. How is this possible? With Ephraim having, for the most part, been assimilated into the Gentile world, how can people who don't even know of their Hebrew roots be called back to Israel? Even more, in Revelation 7, we're given a list of 144,000 witnesses for God, and they're all Hebrews. And the 12 tribes of Israel are listed as each providing 12,000 members of their tribe to make up the 144,000. So in addition to the 10 lost tribes becoming fused with the Gentile world, which is but historical and biblical fact, it seems there must be another and separate element of those 10 lost tribes that did not become absorbed, or at least as absorbed. An element of those 10 tribes who have been stubbornly retaining their Hebrew identities while in exile in various Gentile nations right up to this day. Is that even possible? Wouldn't we have heard about it? Could it be that the 10 tribes of Ephraim still exist, that they know who they are, but they've been hidden in plain sight for over 2,500 years? Now, I'm going to be showing a breathtaking video next week that is slightly over an hour and a half in length. It is fast moving, it's wonderfully made, and better yet, it's accurate and it's timely. You won't fall asleep. So those that will be listening online and on streaming TV or some other way, you can stay in step with what the Torah class congregation is going to see and going to hear. The film is entitled The Quest for the Lost Tribes by Simcha Jacobvici, and it can be purchased from HolyLandMarketplace.com or can be viewed for free on YouTube. So just go to YouTube and look up Quest for the Lost Tribes. All right. This concludes part two of the 10 Lost Tribes of Israel, and I hope to see you next time.
For more teachings of real Bible study and to rediscover God's Word with Tom Bradford, visit Torah Class today on the web, streaming TV, or download the Torah Class mobile app.